the Committee on Rules to order. My apologies for being not very late, but a little bit. We will start, we don't have any measures, right?
No, ma'am.
But we will start by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 43.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 43 recasts and clarifies provisions excluding specified individuals from certain lobbyist registration and filing requirements and requires a person who holds position with a public body or private entity and whose work includes lobbying to comply with prescribed lobbyist registration and filing requirements. There are no amendments offered with this bill, and fiscal and revenue paperwork both indicate that no impact is a result of this legislation.
Okay, we have Senator Hansel here who would like to open our testimony on Senate Bill 43. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Hansel, Senator from District 29, which includes Northeast and Central Oregon. This came to my attention this morning on a teleconferencing call that I have every couple of weeks with the Chamber in Pendleton and Blue Mountain Community College, and they asked me about Senate Bill 43 because they had some concerns about it, and I was not familiar with it, so staff and others began to work on it to see what it was, and I do have some concerns about it, and I'd like to share them with you at this point. What Senate Bill 43 does, as the current law is written, as I understand it, a person must register as a lobbyist so long as, number one, they provide personal services for money for the purposes of lobbying, they spend more than an aggregate amount of 24 hours during any calendar quarter lobbying, and I use the word and, they spend an aggregate amount of tax in excess of $100 lobbying during any calendar year. But as Senate Bill 43 is written, a person must register as a lobbyist if they do those similar things, provide services for money for the purposes of lobbying, they spend more than an aggregate amount of 24 hours during any calendar year lobbying, calendar quarter, sorry, lobbying, they spend an aggregate amount in excess of $100 lobbying during any calendar year, or, and that's the difference, that little word, connecting word, or, they work for a public body or a private entity with work responsibilities that include lobbying. I believe that 43 becomes unfair or overly burdensome. As written, Senate Bill 43 would require a much broader class of individuals to register as lobbyists than the committee may have originally intended. For example, local officials who come to testify on a bill that is of importance to their official duties would need to register as a lobbyist. So if a Umatilla County Commissioner came to speak on a bill. Furthermore, any common citizen who spends more than $100 traveling from the easternmost area of my district to Salem, or even just from my district to come to testify, would likely need to register as a lobbyist. I'll give you an example. When we had the hearings on the county extension bill, a couple came from Minnehaha in my district. That is the furthest most place in Oregon in my district you can live. It's almost Hell's Canyon. That trip is over 800 miles, 806 miles. If reimbursed at the state rate, the traveler would receive $435 alone, well above the $100 threshold. In addition, there'd be probably two, maybe three nights lodging plus all the meals. Requiring local officials and our citizens to register may chill their inclination to come and testify on legislation that directly impacts them or their budgets. Senate Bill 43 fixes. I would propose an amendment. I don't have it with me. We can work it out. But clarifying that no local public official or common citizen should have to register as a lobbyist to come and testify before the legislature. I'm more than happy to work with the bill supporters to make the appropriate fixes and be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, so the issue that you have is on line 7 of page 2, committee, if you have your bills in front of you, where it's all these other criteria to sign up as a lobbyist or anyone who spends an aggregate amount
exactly.
In excess of $100.
Exactly.
And your point is that the or should be an and? Or I suppose you could have the $100 be $1,000.
Or just exempt, you know, make it clear that if you're just John Q. Citizen, you're coming to exercise your constitutional rights to testify, you don't have to register for a lobbyist if it costs you more than $100 to get here.
Yeah. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You use the term public official. Does that include thing like school employees or city employees, county employees who may do just as you described, that are coming across to testify on a bill that has an impact on their work?
Probably. I would think so. I mean, public officials, you got elected public officials, but you have others. We have folks coming all the time, it seems to me, at least from our area, county commissioners. I had a school board member today in my office from Pendleton talking about education. It's just a part of our process. Not everybody views lobbyists in a favorable light, and for them to have to register as one, people might, wait a minute, you know, it's a misconception, I think, on their part, but it's just, and then if they don't, we create, I think, a penalty situation where they'll be, could be taken before the Ethics Commission fine for not registering.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee?
I'm
Senator Farrell.
You got a couple people.
This guy has his hand up.
Hello. Houston, we're here. A couple of things. I'm going to get a little discussion going, if you don't mind, with Senator Hansel, so I can really familiar with the original intent of this bill, colleagues. I recall from the last session is we have individuals who are paid to be lobbyists by public entities, and we have individuals who are paid by corporations to be lobbyists. Hence the origination of the bill here. But I'd like to go back to Senator Hansel. You made mention, I'm grasping and writing notes here, because obviously there's another challenge I'm going to point out here that I never even noticed in this law. Having worked at three sessions in a row, you always learn something out of here. Obviously mayors, council members, non-paid people who come and testify, but individuals, the intent of the law and the intent of the original law is if someone's paid and they get paid to come here. So you could say, for example, you could have someone in a school district that's paid to come lobby, and that is a registered lobbyist or the intent. But then I also, and looking for your reaction to that, I also noticed back up in front, and I'd never noticed it before, on page one, there's no exemption in the individuals for an individual to come meet any one of us. It's all testifying before a committee, and they're on the agenda of the committee, or they signed in. I had never noticed that before. So even if a citizen comes from, I'll just say Paradise Valley, which, oh, by the way, is north of me, and it is farther than Anamnaha, so you're mistaken, Senator, okay?
Sure,
okay.
I'm sorry. Is,
if they come from there and they come to visit you or I, either one of them, there's no exception here. I don't know. We just missed that somewhere in the law. But your comments, Senator, or Senator Hansel, your comments on the paid individuals, I mean, the original intent, again, is you're a paid lobbyist, whether public or private, that they should have to register. You have a problem with that one?
Senator Boquist, no. I think the intent. I've just done a real thumbnail research. Andrew from the caucus office has been very helpful because it just literally hours ago that was brought to my attention. I think in the original, this could be, and I'll let the folks from there explain it, but in the original language, I believe the Ethics Commission was not bringing everything together. They were interpreting it with ors rather than and. Mm-hmm. So meeting any one of those. And so I think this was an attempt for them to take their interpretation and put it into law. But in so doing, I think it broadens a net that catches people that we don't want to be caught and would not be in the best interest of Oregon politics, I think.
Thank you. Senator Farrelly, I think, was next.
Madam Chair, I share the concerns. I mean, even if you look at the mileage reimbursement, it's at 54 cents a mile, which is the federal level. You're 300-400 miles and you're over the limit. Yeah. So it just makes, I think we ought to clarify the intent.
Right.
So that we don't scoop up folks that are just ordinary citizens.
Let me see if
I'm good.
Okay. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, thank you. I share the Senator's concerns. I've had this for a long time. The definition of lobbying, I think, is incredibly broad. And what I think people were really thinking about when they think about that is the people who are paid specifically to be lobbyists. And I think you get confused with you have government employees. And I know, for example, when I was with the Public Utility Commission, just out of an abundance of caution, we had almost all of the management people listed as lobbyists, had to file as lobbyists, and we had to file quarterly reports on how much we paid them and if they traveled or not. If they're just, you know, if you called up, Senator, and had an issue, well, we had to log that down as lobbying, trying to resolve your issue. And I think you have that across the board. And I think the same is true of local governments as well. You know, somebody complains about the, you know, the Central Lynn School District, and I try to deal with that, and the superintendent's working with me. All of a sudden, he's a lobbyist. Oh. And I think that's a problem, the way, and it's, it emanates from the definition of lobbying, which I think we probably should clarify. I think it's really those who are specifically, you know, hired guns who come and work in the building for somebody. It's not really the public employees who are trying to do the work of the public.
Exactly. I agree.
I think I have a disagreement on
it. Oh, no. I'm just pointing out that the public has hired guns, too. So those we do want to register.
Senator Burdick, the other thing I would bring, since I stay in a motel room the whole time I'm down here, the per diem in Salem, after taxes and everything, is over $100. So one night's lodging, if they can get a government rate, which they may not even be able to get, is going to kick them in, even if they don't get it with the mileage, but combine them both and meals, they're going to spend money coming here to do that.
Plus, you have to include the cost of their salary during that time.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Those richly paid mayors.
That's right.
Volunteer.
Well, I wanted to thank you for bringing this to my attention and for coming to share this with us. This is why it's so important to keep track of our constituents, because sometimes they come up with flaws that we wouldn't have seen. So, other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now we will get the answer to all our questions from Reese Sheffers and Ron Burson.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Ron Burson. I'm the executive director for the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, so we'll be happy to answer those questions. Marie Sheffers today is going to talk about Senate Bill 43 and go through it real quick, and then I can say we'd be happy to answer any questions and take care of some of the concerns we just heard. I think we can take care of those pretty good.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Marie Sheffers. I'm the Compliance and Education Coordinator for the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Farioli. We are here today to talk about Senate Bill 43, and I wanted to mention just before we get started that there is a definition of lobbyists in the statute that comes before what we've seen here. So there are three definitions here for lobbyist: any individual who agrees to provide personal services for money or any other consideration for the purpose of lobbying, any person not otherwise subject to paragraph A who provides personal services as a representative of a corporation, association, organization, or other group for the purpose of lobbying, and any public official who lobbies. So that's kind of the foundation that we're dealing with for who it is who's expected to lobby. And then in 171.735, which is where these changes are, what it's listing is exceptions to that. So you might be in one of those three categories, but if you meet certain exceptions, you still don't have to register. And that includes a list of state officials, so the governor, chief of staff, and all of that. And then what it currently says in this piece that we're talking about is that you don't have to register if you do not agree to provide personal services for money or any other consideration, if you do not spend more than an aggregate amount of 24 hours during a calendar quarter, and if you do not spend an aggregate amount in excess of $100. So essentially, if you fail to meet all three of those, then you don't have to register. If you fail to meet only one of those, then you do have to register. And that's where that confusion comes in with the and or, because we were trying to clarify the double negative that was there at the beginning. So it's a little bit, the wording is a little bit different in what we're coming here before you here now. So what we're getting at here is that there are people who are in the legislature every day who are lobbying, who are representing state agencies, who are representing nonprofits, who are representing corporations, who are not registered as lobbyists. They're not filing those reports every quarter. And when they come before the commission, they say, well, I didn't do 24 hours in a calendar quarter. I applied for a job that said you'll be the lobbyist for this agency, this organization, but you can't prove that I did 24 hours of lobbying. And that's really difficult for us to prove. We can look at their calendars. We can look at your calendars. We can try to match them up, and they can tell us, well, I wasn't actually lobbying during that time. We were talking about something else. I didn't get to meet with that person on that day. I got there, and then I waited for 45 minutes for a three-minute meeting on that other day. It's really difficult for us to prove the 24 hours ever. So in our talking with DOJ, they've said that because this language is here, agree to provide personal services for money or other consideration for the purpose of lobbying, they've told us that essentially anyone who is not a contract lobbyist, we have to be able to prove either 24 hours or $100 before they have to register as a lobbyist. So, and I want to clarify just on the $100 requirement, that is only on food, beverage, and entertainment that is spent lobbying. It doesn't include travel expenses, it doesn't include living expenses, and it doesn't include office overhead according to the expenditure requirements in 7.4.5. So what we're proposing here is that the lobbying, people who are already listed under that definition of lobbyists in 7.2.5, even if they don't make 24 hours every calendar quarter and they don't make the $100 every calendar quarter, if they hold a position with a public body or a private entity with work responsibilities that include lobbying, they would be subject to the registration and reporting requirements. That means that public bodies and private entities have the ability to determine which of their staff are the people who have to register. We're not going out there and saying, you supervise four lobbyists, therefore you're required to register. We're not going out there and saying, oh, in that little other 5% other duties, every once in a while you get called in to talk about a specific issue. What we're saying is if you work for a state agency or for some other public body, if you work for a nonprofit, if you work for a company, and your job is to be the lobbyist for that organization, that's what your job responsibilities are, as defined by your employer, then you register immediately instead of waiting to try to prove the 24 hours or $100.
So if the in the example that Senator Hansel gave, where a county commissioner comes over to testify on a bill that affects county government, would that person, yes or no, have to register to be a lobbyist?
I think that's going to depend on the county and what their job description is for their county commissioners.
So
it says any public official.
So if it's an elected official, I think it's inherent that an elected official represents their government.
Public official. Any.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to be elected. You could be an appointee.
A treasurer. Or a
cemetery board.
Yes. Well, there is a difference, though, between an appointee, because if you're an appointee, you have a job description. If you're an elected official, you...
Yeah, yeah, I agree that there's a difference, but the statute says public official. So any... You public official. Any.
Yes, it says that.
And so how many public officials are there in Oregon now? 38,000.
Let me ask you this. When someone registers as a lobbyist, is there a fee to register?
Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Farioli, there is no fee to register, no.
But they have to do quarterly reports?
They do, yes.
Senator Boquist.
I would like to go back to your cross-examination and go back and ask the director a couple of questions, if you wouldn't mind.
Please.
This is age old. We've worked on this for three sessions. We're still trying to figure out corporations and paid mercenaries, whatever we want to agree on down there. So my question is actually leaving, if you went into the bill, Senate Bill 43, and you left the area in which we're having this discussion about public body and the bold in the front, and went back to page 1, either lines 10 to 13 or lines 20 to 28,
10 to 13 basically says an individual, as Senator Hansel says, is coming here to the Capitol to testify. It would seem logical to me a way to clarify the statute would be in lines 10 through 13 to add something to the effect that if they're coming here to meet their legislator, right, because that's who the individual's coming to meet, and we're not even in there, by the way. They can't even meet us and not be out of this deal. Is adding legislator there, and then down in blocks 10 to 28, doing what the chair said, going back to elected, making an automatic exception for an elected official, because now your school board members, your mayor, your so on and so forth like that. What I'm looking for is a solution versus arguing about the definition in the back, basically an easy exit strategy. Does that, you're the, help us out here. Does that make more of a sense than trying to go back and mess around with the forward language other than the and the or?
Yeah, Chair Burdick, Senator Boquist, I think that is correct. I mean, I just want to be clear what the original intent here was. I mean, we understood that the net was going to get a little wider here, but what we're trying to capture is those employees of either agencies or public bodies, public corporations, not-for-profits, that are essentially in the building each day, that is part of their job duties is to lobby a legislative agenda through the legislative process, meet with you folks, and getting their legislative agenda, such as myself. It's my job to get the agency's legislative agenda through. And instead of counting 24 hours or $100, and again, that $100 is not just spent on travel or a hotel room, and it has to be spent on you folks, on legislative or executive officials, that they register. And so whatever language that we can tighten this net up to make sure that we're only capturing what we want to capture here is the folks that are in the building on a consistent basis. The 24 hours and $100 should be for those citizens that want to come in and see you folks, should be for that school board member that wants to come in and talk about school funding for their school and how it's going to affect their school. We're not trying to capture those folks, that county commissioner that would like to have some type of economic development out there and came and meet with you less than 24 hours and did not spend any money on you folks, then they shouldn't register. All those folks still stay in the 24 hour or $100. All we're trying to do is get the people like myself, who is employed by the state of Oregon, to lobby a legislative agenda through.
Okay, so you're not trying to reach elected officials?
Chair Burdick, no.
Okay. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there's always this distinction, has been for as long as I've been around here, between, quote, public officials who are providing information to clarify issues and those who are advocating. Under the last two governors, they specifically had executive orders that they could not lobby issues unless the governor approved them. So mostly they were providing information, clarifying issues, often at the request of the legislature. Are they lobbyists?
Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer, I just want to be clear right now. I am lobbying you for this bill. So I am not just providing information. This is a bill that the governor has allowed my agency to bring forward to your committee. And so in my current role right now, I am lobbying.
You're independent of the governor anyway.
Well, I am still an executive official that works for the executive branch, and she is the leader of the executive branch. But anyway, in the definition of actually lobbying, it does come down to just providing information. If you folks had called me in here to give you stats of some sort, that is not lobbying. It's basically trying to influence you. And there's actually, I don't have the definition here.
You're looking at the definition of lobbyists?
No, the definition of actually lobbying means, so whenever I am means to influence, or I am trying to influence or attempting to influence legislative action through oral or written communication with legislative officials, solicitation of executive officials, or others influenced to attempt to influence legislation, or attempting to build goodwill. So in your examples, when people are just up here providing statistics for you to make a better decision with, that is not lobbying. But when I am up here saying that I have this bill, I would like to move this bill forward, either in its current form or in some type of amendment. It looks like we need some type of amendment. that is lobbying. And if I come to your office, an individual office, and I have this same conversation saying that I would like your support to move this legislative action forward, that is lobbying. If you call me into your office and ask me about statistics, how many lobbies do you have? How many lobbies do you think this would add to the rolls? Is there any fiscal impact involved with adding these lobbyists? That would not be lobbying. I'm just providing statistics. So it is a fine line out there, but it is one that I think is well understood.
So if you were just looking at state agencies, would you likely just consider those that had the title or primary job as legislative liaison as the lobbyist for an agency?
Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer, one of the things that brought this forward to me, as in addition to Senator Boquist calling my office and asking me a question about a particular individual from an agency, why they weren't registered lobby, was that legislative contact book that is out there that we actually publish as state agencies, saying these are the contacts for state agencies, and looking at that book and seeing, are those folks registered? And when they weren't, contacting them and asking them why. And each one of them says, I don't think I'm doing 24 hours. So there are people inside the book that the state puts out that are not registered with this office. And I thought, these folks, it's their job duty to push that agency's legislative agenda forward. And so I asked the governor to bring this forward, and that it was a problem that I thought we need to have fixed, that people out there should know what I am also spending on lobbying, what my agency is spending on having me hired as their lobbyist.
So, so getting back to your definition, it's not in the statute, but it must be in your administrative rules. You said that it only includes money that the person actually spends on food or drink, I think you said, and efforts with that. So that wouldn't include the staff time or travel time or any of that? Because you're not going to find most, in fact, my experience, no public officials have money to pay for lunches or coffee or what have you. I mean, it's just essentially their time of being there.
Senator Burdick, Senator Beyer, you're right, we're a frugal bunch. We don't spend a lot of money. But it actually is in statute. It is in 171-745-1A, and it says what needs to be on the statement of expenditures, and it's the total amount of all monies expended for food,
so
refreshments.
Where are you at again?
Sorry, 171-745.
Okay.
It's not in this bill. It's a different place. Okay.
Sub 1, sum A.
Total amount of all.
And it requires the total amount of all monies expended for food, refreshments, entertainment by a lobbyist for the purpose of lobbying. And that's what the $100 is tied to. So if you spend $100 on food, refreshment, or entertainment to a legislative or an executive official, then you would also break that threshold that would need to register under current statute. So if those school board members that come to Salem and do end up expending that money or expend over 24 hours, then they would need to register with the commission. Other than that, this bill, it was not our intent to have them register as lobbyists.
So do you read that as being expended on a legislator? It doesn't really say.
Well, I'm sorry, Senator.
Senator Hansel example, they come over, they get $125 per diem. Does that count? Would they have to report that?
Senator Burdick, Senator Byrd, no, that is money paid to them for their travel, so it is not part of that. What it is, this is expended on legislative or executive officials.
That's not really clear. I hope you are clear in your.
It goes back to the definition of lobbying. So most of these statutes tie into each other. So this is what needs to be on your expenditures report on what you have expended on legislative or executive officials. So you don't put anything on the expenditure report that you expend on private people other than legislative or executive officials. So, in fact, I think we have a sunset law that's running around here right now where it used to be others, it was in that definition, and we have been operating under the last two biennia now that it's just down to executive and legislative officials.
Senator Farrelly.
First of all, This isn't intended to be an adversarial meeting. We're just trying
There's some questions defensive raised,
and I think they're legitimate questions. Madam Chair, the whole idea of the public official. Let me give you an example, hypothetical, and I won't hold you to that. But it's, so suppose the mayor tells the city manager, you go down to Salem and straighten out those bozos on X bill. How, it'll probably be a House bill.
More than likely.
Wouldn't it? And we will pay you for your room, meals, mileage, and any expenses, incidental expenses, including entertainment, if you happen to meet with a public official or a legislator. That falls under the, in my opinion, that falls under the category of other considerations that the person is being given for the purpose of coming to this Capitol building to lobby legislators. What's your definition of other consideration?
Senator Burdick, Senator Ferraioli, other considerations, what are we looking at that at?
Well, quoted the statute and basically said that if they're paid or they're getting other considerations, then they'd have to register as lobbyists. And in my estimation, other consideration are when somebody gives you the time to go and you're being compensated for that. You already mentioned mm-hmm. that, Senator. Pays your expenses and your mileage and your incidental expenses, including lodging, meals, and any entertainment costs. You know, those are other considerations. You know, you could call them reimbursements if you want to, but in a complaint-driven system, they fit nicely under the definition of other considerations.
So, Chair Burdick, Senator Ferraioli, the reason I haven't talked about this lobbyist means that's A and other considerations is because Department of Justice, and I think Marie talked about this, has interpreted this to mean the contract lobbyists that are in the building that actually sign contracts with folks to lobby for different companies out there.
Yeah. Mr. Burson, if you are calling a public official a lobbyist, then it applies to them as well.
If we were actually able to take that definition into the public officials, we wouldn't have to be before you today. We could actually say that they are getting a salary or they're getting a compensation for this or other considerations. So that's what's brought us before you today. We could not wrap these people into, when I talk about these people, I'm talking about myself as a public official who lobbies.
I think your intent is clear enough. The bill doesn't get there. I think the feedback you're getting from the committee. Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, just one other very brief. So the city manager shows up at the behest of the mayor and he spends 6 hours in the building. Has two appointments, both of which are 15 minutes long, and 30 hallway conversations of indeterminate length, and a lunch with somebody who has potentially a vote. So they would have to add all 6 hours, or is it just the two appointments for 15 minutes each, and a fraction of a conversation with each person that they met in the hallway, and the hour lunch that they'd have to report the aggregate of?
So, Chair Burdick, Senator Ferraioli, again, I think you've illustrated the problem that the agency has here.
Yes.
Is that we can't count that, but the most they would ever do is 6 hours, but it's probably less than that because those conversations may not have been lobbying conversations.
Right.
Now, at the meal, there might have been another amount of minutes at that meal that you were actually lobbying, but there could have been time at the meal that you were just showing off your grandkids or something like that. So that's the difficulty that we have. That person would still fall, even underneath this bill, as we have written, would fall underneath. They'd have to come up for 24 hours or the $100. In the absence of you doing either one of those two, they would not be required to register. So that city manager, in your example, would not be required to register.
So, Mr. Burson, I think you've illustrated the point. That you cannot have a statute that depends on the content of the conversation. And you cannot have an enforcement where the person is self-reporting the content of the conversation and aggregating those minutes. You know, the whole thing seems to me to be amazingly ambiguous. So why would we build a statute that you can't enforce? Because the folks under complaint would simply say, well, you can't prove it. And then you're it makes a mockery of the authority that you're trying to create here. So I'm just going to say it needs a rewrite.
Aren't you trying to get just a different criterion than the 24 hours? You're trying to back up and get someone whose job description actually calls for lobbying. Isn't that what you're trying to get at?
Chair Burdick, yes. I guess I've done a poor job of illustrating what we're asking the committee for today, because what the law is currently is what Senator Farioli had talked about, is we do have to determine what the gist of the conversation was, what the actual content of that conversation was.
I'm trying to get away from that.
And the time. I'm trying to get away from that for just the people that it's in their job description. And again, I want to leave the control with the cities, counties, and the state agencies to determine what that job description is. But if it's in their job description to lobby you folks a legislative agenda through, that they would register with us, and we would not try to count the 24 hours or the $100 or try to figure out what those conversations were. So I apologize to the committee if I've given the opposite indication here, but what we have currently is it's difficult for me to determine those conversations. What I'm asking for is let's take all those conversations out. Let's leave it up to the entities to decide the job duties. If they put it in their job description that they're there to lobby you, then they register with us and they file quarterly reports.
Okay.
If it's not there, they don't.
I think it's fair to say that we want this bill narrowed down. We have no interest in having our local elected officials covered under it. And what else? We need to give some direction here because the bill is too broad. Senator Beyer.
I think what we're trying to get at here, or I hope what we're trying to get at here, is trying to get at those people whose primary responsibility is lobbying, not the people, the city manager who tangentially comes in to talk about a bill during the session of the direction of his or her council, or for that matter, state employees who get called in to talk about something. I think that's a little unclear. What we really want is the people who are, we would probably all agree, are lobbyists. That's their job, and are spending money on legislators. Huh?
If a state manager, if a state worker comes in and says, don't screw around with my purse, is that lobbying?
Again, I think Chair Burdick, Senator Farioli, it may be lobbying, but I don't believe it would be part of their job descriptions. They wouldn't formulate this bill, and they'd have to do it for 24 hours in a calendar quarter for us to break that threshold currently. And back to Senator Beyer.
You'd be surprised. During a session.
I just wanted to shake my head for the record and agree with what we're trying to get to is those folks that I think every one of you folks would consider them to be lobbying you during the session in the hallways here.
And certainly people in the book that you're talking about.
I think where you're trying to go is entirely appropriate. There's a whole lot of gray in there, and I will tell you from when I was with the Public Utility Commission, my staff, they were recording all kinds of stuff in great fear that they would screw up someplace, and I know that was true across state agencies, and I think it's confusing for local governments. Frankly, it's probably more of a concern for the larger governments that may have one or not. I'm trying really hard to comply with the law, and it gets hard.
Yeah. I think the more clarity we can get on this, the better. And it's not clear now.
I appreciate that. And let us go back and see if we can't get rid of some of the gray area.
Okay. Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to work with 25% of the conversation we've had with the Ethics Commission to tighten this up, because I'll just point out that three-quarters of the conversation we've had at the diocese along here is existing state law. I just want to point that out. It's existing state law, and it's deleted on the front page, and legislative council simply moved it to the back page, which we are not going to resolve right here. But for the finite area that we're trying to address, I think I'd be happy to work with the Ethics Commission to ensure that legislators can have people come and the local elected people can come to be exempt from this thing.
Speaking on behalf of the entire committee, we appreciate that, Senator Boquist. So.
As the good Senator Farioli said, we're not being critical, and you're right. A lot of it is just looking. This is the opportunity to look at the statute and say,
why did we do this?
A lot of this doesn't make any sense.
I just want to know.
All of us were here when we voted on this once before.
I was not.
I think you were.
No, he was the commissioner.
I can't escape on that one.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have one witness signed up, Paul Cosgrove, who is... Mr. Cosgrove, are you a registered lobbyist?
Madam Chair, I most certainly am. Paul Cosgrove, and I'm appearing on behalf of my own interests, except that I would like to mention that the issue I'm going to talk about, I think, affects nearly all of my clients and the clients of many of my colleagues who are registered lobbyists signed up with the OGEC making quarterly reports. And let me give you a scenario. It's a private sector scenario, and I think it shows another area where this bill is too broad. The people I report to in hypothetical Association A may be a regional person who has a title of state government affairs. Clearly, that involves lobbying. They may report to somebody nationally who has that title as well, back in D.C. or some other East Coast location. They also have government relations, including the state of Oregon, as well as many other states, as part of their job description. None of those people may ever darken the door of Salem. None of them may ever speak to you. You may run into them at NCSL or at CSG or at RLCC or DLCC or one of those national meetings. But they'll never be in Salem, and they'll never be advocating a particular issue. As drafted right now, we all, and a number of my colleagues and I have been studying this over the last 24 hours, believe those people would all need to be registered. And I think they would find it rather quizzical that having had no contact directly with this state, but having their association or company registered, because they have one of us, and we're reporting, and that's appropriate, they would find it quizzical that they should be registered and they would be reporting as well. And I don't think that's the case in, as far as I know, any other state. We'd be sort of an outlier there in terms of how far up that chain we go. So that's the reason why I think the current thresholds or some other kind of threshold is appropriate, so that there's some sort of minimum contact that people must have with the state and with you and the process before they have to register. The dollar one is of less interest to most of my clients than the hours, and whether 24 is the right number of hours or not is a debatable issue. It's sort of arbitrary, but you could pick 8, 10, 12. There'll be an arbitrary limit at some point. Because of, as Mr. Burson said, there are a number of things that they spend money on that aren't counted as lobbying, their transportation, their flight here, or whatever. That isn't counted as expenditures on lobbying. But if they spend a significant amount of time in the building, they should register. And in fact, when they do register. But if they don't spend that time, any significant amount of time, that's when we think they should not be registered or not have to register. I'd just point out one other thing. The definition of lobbying in our statute is, as Mr. Burson just pointed out, broad, and it includes the last line, which is a very important line, or gaining goodwill. If I'm talking about my grandchildren to one of you, arguably that's gaining, well, hopefully it's gaining goodwill, because they're really cute grandchildren, right? That is, in fact, defined as lobbying right now. So there are a lot of activities that people do in the building where we don't have to talk about whether they're talking about a bill necessarily. If they're talking to you in a friendly conversation, that is defined as lobbying under our statute. So the reaching 24 hours is not that difficult if somebody actually flies in here for a couple of days of meetings. They probably have reached that threshold, and they probably will need to register. That's our job to make sure that they do so. We're pretty careful to make sure they do and don't get into trouble, but we would rather not have to go tell our clients in these various upper echelons whose job descriptions do include government relations for the state of Oregon as well as all those other states, that now Oregon requires them to register and report quarterly. So that's the issue I bring before you, and I appreciate the time to explain it to you.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Roblin.
Thank you. So would it be easier? I mean, would there be a threshold to say X number of days in the state lobbying as opposed to hours? Because hours drives me crazy, because I think you could have the conversations that happened before about does this count for the 15 minutes walking down the halls or not? And just say days in the capital, in the state, some days as opposed to here, as opposed to hours. So I showed up, I was here for a day, that's one. I came the next day for a couple of hours, it's two. and figure out a day, number of days in the building or whatever, would that be easier to keep track of than hours?
Madam Chair, Senator Roblin, I think it would be easier. Any of these time limits is going to be arbitrary and overbroad in some cases and underbroad in others. But if you pick one that's easy to count, that's always better. One that we can all know how to report it and report it accurately and report it like we're supposed to, better still.
Okay. Senator Farrelly.
If the legislator hates the lobbyist, can the lobbyist deduct that time from the game?
Can I give you a list? Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly. No, that's why we're trying to get your goodwill. We're trying real hard to do that. Right. We may not succeed, but we're trying.
Got it.
Maybe you can take this issue under advisement, Senator Boquist.
Oh, I think I got it. Okay. We're not happy with what we want to do because we're not happy with what we used to do and what's a present law. Now we want to fix
That's
it.
Right.
I would just point out, I think that the current statute, without changes, we know how to work it and do it and report it accurately. And therefore, if we change it, we're going to need to retrain everybody. And that's fine. And there might be simpler ways to do the measurement.
And I think it's fair to say that the primary emphasis of this statute is not aimed at your clients. It's aimed at a different population.
Mr. Burson said the people who come into the Capitol all the time, and these are people who do not. So thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. We have no other witnesses signed up, so we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 43. And I'm going to open. Do we have many people signed up for this one? So I am going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 44. But we are having the Secretary of State come in, and so we will suspend the hearing when he gets here. But we're going to get as far as we can. So we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 44.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 44 permits the Executive Director of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission to designate an employee of the Commission to fulfill duties and responsibilities lawfully assigned to the Executive Director. There are no amendments associated with this measure, and the fiscal paperwork indicates there is a minimal fiscal impact, and the revenue paperwork indicates there is no impact associated with this legislation.
Okay. Mr. Burson, you're up again, and Ms. Shippers as well.
Again, Chair Burdick, Senator Vice Chair Farrelly, again, committee members, thank you for having me. My name is Ron Burson. I'm the Executive Director for the Ethics Commission. So this bill is before you in that it's a great opportunity when you folks meet to fix problems out there. And you might remember in the last session, the governor's bills that went through narrowed some of the commission's timelines. In fact, preliminary review timelines went from 135 days down to 30 days. And so I have to be able to sign that work within 30 days. Otherwise, technically, we lose. So what I'm asking here is that in the last couple of years, I've had a couple instances where I had a motorcycle accident and I was out for a little bit. I went on a sheep hunt and I was down in Fields, Oregon, but they did have Verizon coverage down there. But it's difficult for me to sign every time. And so what I'm asking for is if I'm on vacation or if I'm ill and that 30-day timeline is coming up, that I can designate somebody in the agency to go ahead and sign that paperwork that it has been completed so that we can meet that statutory deadline. So basically I just need a little help. And we're a 9-person agency with, like I say, everything has to go through me. And there's just times, like I said, especially like with the motorcycle accident. Luckily, I wasn't banged up too bad, and so I was back to work pretty quickly, but it could have been worse. And I'm getting older too, and so there may be some other health issues that come up with me that keeps me away. So I'm asking for a little help here.
So especially it keeps coming to this committee. Yeah,
it's the 25th Amendment for the Ethics Commission.
So it's just trying to meet those statutory timelines, and right now they're tied to my signature, and there are just times that I may not be available to make that signature because we can't control when that work comes in.
But under this bill, you would still be responsible for the decision.
Chair Burdick, the responsibility will always lie with me as the executive director. Yes.
All right. Questions from the committee?
That's good.
Okay. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 44. Senator Farioli, are you fond of this bill?
Madam Chair, I suppose I could be persuaded.
Yes. Oh, I forgot to open the work session. I'm opening a work session.
Which bill, Madam Chair?
Senate Bill 44.
Senate Bill 44. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 44 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 44 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair, I just want to reiterate what the director said in testimony, that, you know, the intent of the bill is to ensure there's someone there to, you know, make the signatures when he's out ill or on vacation or is disposed. It's not like a blanket, and it's the executive director that remains to be responsible. So,
thank you for putting that on the record again. All right. Any other discussion? Any objections? So ordered. I would like to carry this.
One for two.
Senator Beyer, I think you're a good carrier for this one.
Happy to.
Okay. Now, I see our Honorable Secretary of State has arrived, so we will move into our next agenda item, which is an informational hearing with the Oregon Secretary of State. Welcome, Secretary Richardson.
Hello. With me, Steve Alzinga.
We recognize him.
We do.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dennis Richardson, your new Secretary of State. And I've got a report after being here for 8 weeks that so far so good. I want to let you know that one of the first thing that I did as a Secretary of State, my first official business, was to be involved with a naturalization ceremony up in Portland for 35 brand new Americans who were so excited about becoming citizens of our great nation. And we also organized the first ever naturalization ceremony on the floor house on February 14th. So that may be an annual event. The areas over which I am responsible are to ensure that we have elections that are open, fair, and honest, that the Corporations Division, which is the first stop for new businesses and existing businesses in Oregon, that we remove red tape and barriers as much as we can, and that we assist them in the business that they're in so that they can hire more employees from our workforce in Oregon. The Archives Division is in the process, and it's going to take a while, of becoming a GAO for the state of Oregon, where we inform the citizens and you as the elected representatives of the citizens as to what we're finding in our audits, and giving praise where praise is due, and without fear or favor exposing what is happening so that the people's money can be tracked and will assist you in the oversight, that responsibilities that the legislature has. In the Archives Division, we are responsible for the history of our state, and we have a constitutional project that we're continuing that was started by Governor Brown to restore the condition of the Constitution, which is fading fast. I mean, it was written in 1857, and be able to have it be displayed regularly by creating a display case that's vandal-proof, that is controlled for humidity and temperature, and make it available so that when citizens and school trips and, you know, children on field trips can come to the state, either in the Capitol or in the archives, that they are able to see the Constitution and be reminded of the history of this great state. And so with those areas, we're working hard, and we are working to increase our cooperation with the Audits Division in a way that hasn't happened before, the JLAC. And so I met with the Joint Legislative Committee on Audits and have sent a letter to them today requesting information on which audits they feel would be important, because instead of us being separate silos trying to protect turf, I feel that the capacity we have in the audits division should be a valuable benefit to the legislature's responsibility to be doing the oversight. And so while we are a separate constitutional organization, and therefore I think it's inappropriate to be ordered to do things, I made it very clear that we want to be a valuable assistant and resource to the legislature in doing its oversight. So those are some of the things that we're involved in. We've released the 2016 State of Small Business Report from the Office of Small Business Assistance under Ruth Miles's able leadership. That is expanding so that it's helping businesses not only maneuver through the red tape and the barriers of dealing with the state, but also with local government. And it's a way for us to show the citizens around the state that that we're from the government and that we are here to help and do it in a way that will make being a business in Oregon better. So that's kind of the overview of what we're doing and where we're at, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. In the election area, do you have any thoughts or any changes that you plan to make regarding voter access?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We are presently focusing on those populations, especially populations of color, that have sometimes been less than easily accessing the availability to vote. We had a joint meeting, an event up in North Portland with the League of Urban Voters. Let me look down.
Urban.
The Urban League of Portland.
Yes.
And it was an excellent opportunity as we were celebrating it was part of Black History Month, and we wanted to help them to understand that Secretary of State's office is available to take information and get guidance on what we can do to help those communities. A couple of weeks ago, I was able to also to participate in an event up in Portland with the Black Parents Initiative, which is doing just a tremendous job of helping new mothers and young voters to be involved in the system and have the help and guidance that they need. So we're doing an outreach program that we hope will go throughout the whole state. We're also taking information on what is happening with motor voter, where there's been problems, and there have been a few, that we can remove the difficulties that have existed, especially around those people who renew their licenses or get their licenses shortly before an election because they thought they were registered to vote, but it takes about a month for it to process, and so many people were unable to vote that thought they were going to be able to. And so right now we're doing research to determine what we can do to help the accessibility to being registered and to the ballot to be expanded in Oregon.
Okay, on the motor voter issue that you mentioned, what specifically are you looking at in terms of changes?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we want to speed up the process and ensure that the Department of Motor Vehicles is on the same page as the Elections Division, because they actually had gotten a letter before the election, but they still had signs that indicated that if you signed up, you would automatically be registered to vote. Well, while that's true, it didn't mean that they would be able to vote in the next election, which was coming in only a few weeks. And so we're looking to see how it's structured and what we can do to make it work more efficiently. It's not only good for Oregon voters, but there's a number of states that are looking to see how we're doing, and we want them to adopt processes that will avoid them making the same mistakes that we maybe have made because we were doing this on our own.
So how long a gap is there? For example, if someone were to get their license like 21 days before the election, and that very same day they rush home and vote and get on their computer and register to vote online, they would be registered to vote. So how long does it take the Department of Motor Vehicles to get someone registered to vote?
About a month in the processing of that registration. And so we think we can cut that back dramatically so that it should at least be not longer than what you could do if you were registering with the 21-day limit that we have presently.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware of that issue. That sounds pretty serious.
It was for those that registered 22 days or 25 days before the election and assumed that they were registered.
Okay, and where does that stand now? Do you have a work group or something working on this?
We're just working through the division director for elections at this point. Since we don't have an election immediately imminent, right, we'll have it solved before the next election.
Good. Okay. Questions? Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to follow and point it out because as I found out in the last election, and I think I raised this in one of our previous hearings back in November, there's like 13 steps you have to go through. So the motor voter isn't as automated as we thought it was. And so anything that the new Secretary of State could do to reduce the number of steps and reduce that timeline will make the system more efficient.
Right.
Other questions from the committee? I can't believe this. All right. Well, we're here to keep the conversations going as necessary. So I'm sure we'll be seeing you again.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Thank you. All right. That completes our agenda, committee. Any other thoughts, objections, complaints? We are adjourned. Complaints? We are adjourned.